Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. It's mega deal time and it's picket time on the Code AFL show. We're back for another week. Lauren Wood is sitting between Ed Burke and I. We will join some Supercoach chat a little bit later on as well. But there's a lot of news, a lot of games to look at, thankfully. And we're rolling on. No tennis chat this time, Lauren.
No, I'm sure there's a rose and thorns line to be put in there somewhere. I'll let you decide which is which. But no, enough tennis chat because the footy is well and truly upon us. The practice matches, the official ones anyway, are this weekend. And we should get, I guess, a real look at what teams are going to look like heading into round one.
We're only, as we record this, 8 days away from the actual season, which suddenly feels very fast, doesn't it? Ed, you were sent out to Icon Park yesterday as Sam Walsh was enjoying celebrating, popping the champagne on an 8-year monster contract extension. He will be signed up to Carlton to 2034. What's your read on it and what was the mood out there? I'm sure he was happy.
Yeah, well, it was difficult to pick up the mood initially because Carlton tried to jump me and started the presser 3 minutes early. So I was just minding my own business, cruising around the Princess Park facility and then went into the rooms. Walsh was already speaking. But I got in there and got the gist of what he was saying.
It's always a nervous moment as a journalist, isn't it, once you see the microphones go up and think,
Yeah, it was an odd one. Shout out to the Blues, media team for that one. Walsh was very adamant that he's not worried about his body. I think he feels that he's made really big strides over the off season in addressing those back issues. That was a very serious back problem that he had surgery on at the end of 2022. And in previous climates in football, you wouldn't see a player get a deal this big given that kind of injury history. But you can sort of see why Carlton had to do it. I think from my perspective, if you look at the list, the 23 to 27-year-olds, I'm just going to name the other ones in that category aren't Sam Walsh. Just bearing in mind that Will Hayward and Ollie Florent will turn 28 this year. So it's Lewis Young, Lachie Fogarty, Adam Chera, Matt Cottrell, Liam Reedy, Brody Kemp, Francis Evans and Flynn Young.
A lot of star potential there.
Some handy players in that, but no A-graders. And that's why Walsh is so important. Like that, they decided that they couldn't afford to lose him. And I think this 8-year commitment is what they need to do to keep Tasmania away.
It's pretty astounding, isn't it, that those sort of figures, as you say, at that age. And with his injury history, I heard him speak yesterday and then again this morning about the body factor. And I think it's one of those ones, I'm not saying I take it with a grain of salt, right, because there's clearly elite performance and high performance people that run the rule over them and they've got the very best of medical care. But I think it's all well and good to say you're confident in your body, but no matter who you are, you just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, we've seen what's happened with St Kilda, with Max King on that long-term deal. He's had incredible trouble over the last few years. It does make you wonder. I mean, the conversation naturally turns to the tipping point on long-term contracts, but hearing him talk about that he still thinks he can be playing high-level footy at the age of 31 by the time this contract gets to an end, I mean, I think we all hope that he is, and particularly Carlton people. I think he's a great football person. He speaks so well, and I think we'd all love to see him, you know, performing at his best for that long. But I think the rigours of the game, the length of the season, it's so intense now, and especially with what Greg Swan and co are doing at headquarters, really tightening the game up, not a lot of rest. I just don't know what player bodies are going to be put through in the next few years. So I think there's a bit of risk on both sides there.
I'm interested in what you think the knock-on effects are, Josh, because I enjoyed reading your piece yesterday with the Dr. Seuss sort of title, 8 More Than Enough, and for many, too much.
Yeah, well, I had one coach who was not astonished. He understands the market, but he thinks we're heading towards a sort of crash, almost housing market style, that at some point we'll have 4 or 5 of these deals will be out there and they'll just be poison contracts. And I think that might be where we're headed. We've seen one already that had to be moved and paid out in Clayton Oliver, who was a 7-year deal. Half of that's going to be paid for him to play somewhere else. Whether that's Sam Walsh or somebody else, there are going to be players out there where in 3 or 4 years' time we'll think this is just a disastrous contract. But this is what the market is demanding. You have to pay like this. Brisbane's been one club that has been sort of against it. Danny Daly said he would like to see 5-year term limits. But 4 months before that, he signed up Hugh McLeish to 7 years. And he's a good player, a good person, so that was the right deal at the time. But even they're doing it, even though they don't really like it. So every club has to do it. We're going to see 6 or 7 players in the 2030s wondering whether they should be still on a list and they've got 4 years to go on their deal. And the CBA sort of concerns whether a player's going to be paid too much when we don't know whether the CBA is going down next time. Sam Walsh is going to outsee the next CBA anyway. His contract will still be running when we do the next time a negotiation. So it's just a murky situation. The only good thing, I suppose, is that players get a lot of money, which they deserve, but they're going to be earning it for a long time.
Well, that was the push at the time, wasn't it, for things like free agency, is that the players got so much of that power. And I think there's a lot of people at clubs. I spoke to a few more people yesterday as well that are concerned that maybe the power imbalance has maybe gone a little bit too far. Now, the other way we're seeing these, I remember, I'm probably showing my age here, but going to the announcement for Michael Hurley's contract at Essendon, okay, which was 5 years, and it was such a big deal that he'd signed a five-year contract. And nowadays you sort of just pick those up as soon as you want one at clubs across the country. But I don't know what the solution's not the word or tipping point is going to be, because we see the PA boss, James Gallagher, in today's Herald Sun with a flat refusal that they'll never agree to contract limits. So, I mean, everybody's got a vested interest here, but there's got to be some sort of balance, right? Yeah.
I did ask Sam Walsh what he thought the game would look like in 2034 and whether he'd thought much about, you know, how's the AFL going to look?
You've seen the Jetsons flying cars and hoverboards.
Playing for the Clifton Hill Super Kings in the rival competition. I think he hadn't thought about it too deeply. He said that he had a lot of confidence in his manager and in the AFLPA. But, got the impression that he wasn't thinking too deeply about the actual direction of the game in 8 years' time. What he did say was it wasn't about the money for him. He isn't concerned about the size of the next broadcast rights deal. He just wanted the guarantee that he'd still be in the AFL in 8 years' time. And that was quite a nice answer, I thought.
Yeah. Another point that coach made was he would like to see not only contract term limits, but a max contract where you can only be paid a certain amount of money. And that stems from awards. Like we see the NBA, if you win certain awards, you can get an extra bigger contract, and we have certain sizes of the maxes. I'm bringing that to the table now. First impressions, is that doable? Or the PA will laugh it off as doable, but how would that factor into footy if we decide to have max contracts?
Well, there's one thing we don't like in footy, it's change. So I would imagine it's it'd take some doing, wouldn't it? But it'd be an interesting talking point, I think.
Yeah, it's just the kind of player who will receive the first ever maximum contract, if we go down this route, will surprise everyone. And I do feel for Cooper Duff Tytler, if it is him. it'll be someone who's just a freak and unusual player, and it'll be early in their career when that max contract comes. That's why we've seen with Mac Andrew with that. I think that was options for a 10-year deal when he signed on a Gold Coast. Yep. Big deals for key position players and that kind of thing. It won't necessarily be the best midfielders in the game who initially get those contracts.
Maybe instead of the max contract, we call it the unicorn contract. The second happiest person after the news came out yesterday was Zach Butters, because one less free agent is on the board. Now all the Victorian clubs are looking at the next best midfielder, which is him. If Sam Walsh commands an 8-year deal, as we said, Sam Walsh is a very good player, best and fairest winner, but Zach Butters is a tier above him, I think we would all agree. What does he and his manager go to the table when 10 Victorian clubs are calling him and one in South Australia? What can they realistically ask for now?
Well, I think he'd be thrilled and pretty unhappy with Sam Walsh by the same regard, because everyone's now, of course, going to be talking about Zach Butters and the footy hasn't even started yet. I expect this one to run a fair way into the season. I would think this is going to be the topic of the season, is what Zach does with his future. I had 8 in my head as what it would take him to sort of leverage him out of Port and move him across to Victoria. If you're going to do it, you may as well do it well, right? But now that this deal's landed, maybe it is the 10, Ed.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I had sort of blurred vision at the end of yesterday, but did you float 15 years, Josh?
Well, is that stupid? I mean, that would take him to age 40, but stupid?
I think you said in
the stupid's
space,
a word.
Would 15 years be too ridiculous? And I'm going to say, yes, that is a bit ridiculous.
I mean, but I think if he went to I think we're getting almost to the stage where you start factoring in the cost is worth what you have in the front end. So if you get 10 years of Zach Butters, is a few extra years of him not potentially being on the list worth it to get him for the 10 years? I think that's a part of the factor in Sydney getting Charlie Kerno for 5 years, is if we get 3 good years out of him, the last 2 will be worth the risk. If you get 10 years out of Zach Butters and you have to tack on another 5, is that the worst thing?
See, this is sounding like the housing market, because you get people that sort of go, oh, I'm going to spend $900 on a house. Oh, I may as well spend $1 million. Like, what's another 100? And then you're going, it's $100,000. But it's a frightening thought to think that my small child, who can't yet drink from a cup, would potentially be starting uni by the time that Zach Butters ends that deal.
He's potentially starting his AFL career on a 21-year contract.
Exactly right. As I say, my young one could be getting drafted to play alongside Zach Butters. Could be the scenario there if that was such a long deal. I think 15 is ridiculous, personally, but you know what? The housing market did weird things. What's to say the footy market won't?
And you don't blame the first home buyers who put their hands up at the auction. You blame the system for making them do it. So that's where we're at, I think, in AFL. That's
and next on realestate.com.au.
We'll bring them in next. Speaking of bringing in, we're going to take a short break. Lauren, you're going to step out. We're going to super sub Al Patton in to get all the latest on the Supercoach world. Greg Swan tried to tell us the sub was dead, but we've brought it back for Al Patton coming in off the bench to tell us everything we need to know about Supercoach. Well, we're about a week out from the start. Hopefully all your teams are almost finalised. Al, firstly, is your team finalised?
I think I may have used the word perfect when I described my team before any of the practice games. Now it's completely in disarray. Yeah, we've got some proper kind of, I guess, practice games, Amy series games coming up starting tonight at the time of recording, and, you know, only just over a week away from opening round. So a reminder, those opening round games don't actually count for Supercoach. Gives us a few extra days to that Richmond-Carlton game for round one. But yeah, it is starting to feel very real.
Ed, is your team looking in good shape? I can see it open there on your lap.
Yeah, I was just checking it out before. Look, I want to ask you something just off the top without notice about the flex position, because I kind of get into a point where I lock in all my favourite rookies from, you know, around the practice matches. I'll have to do some more tinkering this week, but I tend to be tempted into spending all my remaining money on the flex position. If I have $300,000, I'll spend $300,000. So I've got Sam Lawler at the moment just because that was maximising my salary cap. But how do you usually approach that position?
I mean, you can come a lot of different ways. Last year, a few people tried to put an extra ruckman in there, and I don't think too many people were thinking about that this year, but all of a sudden the rucks are a big topic, which I'm sure we'll get into how we handle that and what the scoring is going to look like with these new rules. So that is another potentially way we could use it. But I mean, for me, it's just a spot for an extra rookie at the moment, and I have a little bit of cash in the bank there, not necessarily spending all of it at the moment, because you just want to be flexible going into this last week or so. You don't want to be suddenly find yourself out of money when round one comes around. So at the moment for me, it's just a spot for the next best rookie that I can't fit on the field somewhere else. But yeah, there's sort of even after a year of it, I don't think anyone knows 100% what the right way to play it is. So you might be spot on. I do like Lawler, and he's someone I'll be looking at very closely this week as well.
Lawler was one of the names that stood out during the community series games. Al, you give us all the info we need on the official Supercoach podcast, but I'm sure you watched the grainy footage from across Victoria and interstate over the last week or so. Any one or two players that really stood out to you from what we saw?
Well, yeah, I'm sure. As I said, we'll get into some of the rucks, but I mean, a couple of the other guys, I think the Saints were all interested to see how they would look with all these new recruits coming in, and a couple of huge ticks in the midfield, Sam Flanders and Mateus Philippou playing in there as well, both very cheap. You can pick them both as forwards in Supercoach this year, and I think they have to be in just about every team. Flanders just absolutely racked it up. Looks like he's back to those glory days that he had a couple of years ago in Gold Coast. Even went back and took a kick in, I think. So,
like that.
Yep, a bit of a Supercoach pig, Sammy Flanders, when he gets the opportunity. And, yeah, Philippou, obviously, he's had a horrible run with injury, but great to see him back out there. And he's obviously put on a bit of size in that time. And, yeah, getting some real chances in the midfield for the Saints there too. So I love both of those guys. And the other one that I just thought was interesting was at the Bulldogs. Ralphie actually mentioned him, picked him in his team. Connor Butterick is a bit of a sort of flown under the radar, kind of one of those trades that didn't generate a lot of attention at the time. But he's a classic Luke Beveridge style player, brings him in, has a role in mind for him. Last year, I think he played a bit forward at the Suns. Not really sure what was happening there. But now he's back in defence, playing that more sort of distributor. He's a good ball user. Bailey Dale got hurt in that practice match, so we'll see how it all comes together when they've got their full team available. But he could be a sneaky one as well for just over 200 grand in Supercoach.
Nice. Ed, you're at a couple of games. Obviously, Sam Lawler impressed you enough at the hang-up for you to put him into into your side. Who else?
Yeah, I did like Lawler's the midfield time he got. He only really played in the midfield in the first quarter, but he showed enough in that when they had the first choice midfield there for me to go with him. I reckon he can average 80 plus. Jordan Croft is one who I really liked the
that
look
is sneaky.
Of. Because I reckon if Darcy and Norton are both going to start the season forward at least, people will ask for Norton to play back at the Dogs given some perceived vulnerabilities down there. But I think plan A is for them to all be down there together. Cross going to get the third tall defender. He was doing very well against Tom McCartan and Lewis Melican against the Swans. I've got his price here. Oh, no, I've taken him out of my team. he was just over 200K.
Can't be going that well then.
So if you're looking for, sometimes those kind of key position players can do well early. If he gets a big game out of the way early, like a 120 or something, could have a little spike at the front. So I reckon I'll probably circle back to having him in my team.
One name that's in a lot of teams is Lockie Jakes. you were at that game. Did he do anything? Would you have him in your team?
Yeah, he had it. He'll play straight away. He had a big role. They were actually talking him up a lot last year. He played very consistently in the VFL. Sometimes he came up onto a wing and he actually hit the scoreboard pretty well. So that's another thing that he can do. And I think that versatility is going to be appealing to Luke Beveridge early in the season. I reckon he's got a spot in the 23, even when Bailey Dale comes back from this knee concern that could keep him out for the first couple of weeks.
I had the pleasure of going out to Casey for North Melbourne and Melbourne, and the clear standout in the match, and he would have racked up a lot of Supercoach points, was Cozzy Pickett. He was just ridiculous. He was way better than everybody else on the field. Kicked 5 goals in 3 quarters, playing mostly half forward, but they rotated him through the midfield as it rolled through. He's in my team at the moment. It's a bit of a shallow pool for forwards, I think, this year, and he's definitely one that I think will be played in a lot of positions between that half forward and midfield and wherever Melbourne needs him, which they're going to need him in a lot of spots. So I think he'll be really, really good this year. Whether he has that consistency, I guess we'll find out, but he was fantastic. And his cousin Latrell was unbelievable. How much is a running bounce worth?
You get a point for that, yeah.
Just 1 point?
Yeah, 1 point.
Well, he would have had at least 15 points in because he was just running, bouncing everywhere. He had one run of 5 bounces and one run of 3 bounces, and that wasn't all. He was unbelievable. He has to play round one for Melbourne. Again, whether his consistency will be there or not, but gee, it'd be fun to root for. And both of them look for each other as well out there, which is always good to see. Now, Al, you mentioned it a couple of times. Ruck is the big question mark. It's always been a key point where you get your points in Supercoach. As I said, I was at Casey and Tristan Cherry was just getting jumped all over by Max the Moose Heath, who was just leaping all over him, and Melbourne was running the ball out of the centre. Cherry had some good moments around stoppages, but there weren't as many stoppages as we're used to, whether that's a pre-season thing or a real thing. I guess we'll find that out. But how worried are you about our traditional points makers in the ruck?
Yeah, it's panic stations at my team, I have to say. And the really interesting thing is that this has coincided with the emergence of Lachlan McAndrew at Adelaide, who seems like he's gone past Riley O'Brien as their number one ruck, and he's only 119,000 in Supercoach. So all of a sudden, you've got the option of, do I want to pay like 700 grand nearly for a Gorn or a Cherry type at the start of the season when I could just pick McAndrew, who seems like he's going to be there, and you know, rucks always score pretty well, regardless, you know, even if it's sort of more on the rookie side. Save 600 grand and all of a sudden you can spend that wherever else you like, get another top liner somewhere else on the field while we wait and see. I saw some quotes from Sam Lonergan at Richmond. Now, I don't think Toby Nankervis is in too many people's Supercoach plans, but he basically said it's going to take 6 to 8 weeks for us to figure out exactly how these rules are going to affect Nank and some of these rucks and how the best way to take advantage of them is. So I don't know if I want to be spending all that money and waiting 2 months for a Cherry or a Gorn to I'm sure they, you know, these guys are professionals and the rules adjust and, you know, these guys figure it out. But yeah, it does throw up a lot of other possibilities. And yeah, all of a sudden you've got all this other money to spend, but what do you do with it? So yeah, it's going to be one of the most interesting watches over the, certainly these Amy series games, and opening round as well will give us maybe a bit more of an idea. But yeah, we're operating on, you know, sort of some small sample sizes, but at the moment I'm veering away from some of those really expensive guys.
Yeah, so you're seriously looking at that strategy of having McAndrew as your, as a starting on-field ruck. Just saving that cash.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think if he's playing, you have to pick him. It's just a matter of, do you put him on the bench? There's a bit more security there with some of your sort of more established guys on the field, or you just pick him on field. The other factor, without getting too much into the strategy, is that round one, if he's named for round one, we get him for round one, and then we get 3 or 4 weeks of bye rounds where it's best 18 scoring in Supercoach. So if you have, if he does get dropped and Rob comes back, which is certainly something that could happen, you've got a little bit of cover. In that gives you a couple of weeks at least to figure out how you get out of it, which is a whole other question. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's definitely an option I'm certainly considering.
Max Gorn wasn't too happy about the rules, or he says he's adjusting to it, but he didn't love it at the Captain's Day earlier this week. We've only seen a very small sample size, as we keep saying, but are the rules good? Do you think this is good for footy?
Can you remember about 3 months ago the narrative was that these rules were coming in to help protect Max Gorn? Like the idea was, oh, let the jumpers jump, like let the boys get some airtime. And, yeah, if Gorn thinks that they've been overcooked, then I don't know. I don't know what else they could have done. Like, the centre lines, out of all the ways you could go with implementing new ruck rules, the centre line one is quite an objective one. Like, we're trying to make the game easier for umpires, not harder. And if you try anything that's too touchy with how the players engage in the middle of the ground, it gets too difficult for the umpires. So this centre line thing is a pretty uncomplicated way of doing it. And in the practice matches, you're sort of able to identify which centre bounces or which centre ball ups those free kicks were going to be paid, which is different from last year. There were all sorts of... There was a game where Max Gorn and Brody Grundy played against each other and whistles were just going left, right and centre against. It was like, these two have been rucking for 10 years. Like, how do they keep making infringements? I think it's made it a bit clearer. And I think once the grounds get a bit wetter, once the ruckmen get a bit more banged up as the season goes along, that advantage for the likes of Lockie Blackiston and the other jumpers is going to be a bit less pronounced.
Yeah, we're seeing, as you mentioned there, Lockie Blackiston looks like he's going to be Essendon's number one ruck. Lockie McAndrew's sort of come almost from nowhere. Max Gorn will still start from Melbourne, but Max Heath will probably play now because of his jumping ability. Is this good that we're seeing more jumpers that they wanted, or are we losing the quality players that have become the star rucks?
I think we'll be okay. As I said, like the jumpers, I reckon that will be exciting in the first few rounds of the season, just as we get used to the new rules. But players like Gorn, Sherry, Brody Grundy, they've been the champion rucks of our game for a reason. I'm sure they'll find a way to adjust to the rules, and even with, you know, modified, we might see some players coming in from really side on and really hugging that centre line at ball up. So there'll be a lot of different things that teams try during the season. So I don't think it's panic stations for the traditional ruckman at this stage.
Now, before we let you go, Al, the Pen v Sword is the key competition in the office here. Who's your favourite heading into the season?
Well, I mean, Ralph, we had a couple of sneaky picks in his team, but so he likes to go a bit left field, so we'll see how we go. But yeah, it's pretty hot competition. I did get a text from a former chief footy writer asking if there was a spot in the league, so it might be a smoky coming in from left field there.
There aren't many options probably to choose from if you're guessing who that is out there in podcast land. Thanks, Al, for joining us. Appreciate that. Thanks for popping in. Make sure you listen to the official Supercoach podcast for all your updates, and we'll be following your moves very closely so I can fix my team before round zero and round one start.
Yeah, good luck, Al. Pressure's on.
Thank you. Supercoach.com.au, everyone. Jump in.
All right, we've sent Al packing. He's given us all the latest on Supercoach, and now we're turning our attention away from contracts, away from that stuff, into actual games, which is nice to talk about. The unofficial practice matches are run and done. We're heading into the community series now as we head towards the actual season starting. Any takeaways? What did we first notice, Lauren? What was your biggest sort of blurb from those viewings?
Not to be too Carlton heavy today. I know we've had a lot of Sam Walsh chat, but I quite liked the look of Carlton's forward line, what they've been able to do. I think all eyes were obviously on there with the absence of Charlie Curnow, who they'll meet in round one. Like the look of Ben Ainsworth, for one, there. And sticking with another big Melbourne club in Collingwood, I caught up with Darcy Moore at the AFL Captain's Day the other day. And I think it was there for all to see. Ed Allen, he's physically bigger, he's fitter. I think he's going to have a really big year off the wing. But I think this weekend, as I say, you'll see a lot of those big names back in. A lot of those Origin players that missed out last week will be back in business, and we'll see some really impressive lineups this week.
One thing that struck me out at the Hangar, I was watching Essendon and Richmond, was the Tigers have got a bit of a squeeze on in their back line. And it's a bit unusual when you talk about a team that probably doesn't have that depth yet, but in defence they do. They had Nathan Broad, Noah Bolter and Sam Banks all missing from that game against the Bombers. Someone like Josh Gibkus, Nick Vlosten, sorry, who was also missing, out of Gibkus, Vlosten, Broad, I think you can only pick two of them in that back line. So that's quite an experienced player missing out, and maybe a role needs to change. Maybe someone needs to go up to the wing. But Tigers have a bit of a squeeze on.
Yeah, we saw it a little bit last year where Jaden Short suddenly found himself outside of the team at stages there. They're going to try and get Sam Grill in the half back line. They like Ben Miller as a defender. So they've got suddenly, and that's where all the experience has been. So they've suddenly got a little bit of a crush on that.
Real shame too for Taj Houghton. I mean, you talk to anyone at Tigerland and naturally all eyes have been on Sam Lawler for the last couple of years. But I tell you what, they have been so bullish on Taj and what he could potentially do and that bone stress injury to the hip. They're saying 4 months, but I mean, as we sit here, March, that takes you pretty heavily into the back end of the season. So unfortunate for him there. But, you know, a lot of good problems to have, as you say, if Adam Uze's got a bit of a squeeze on.
Yeah, it's a real shame for Houghton after a knee in his draft year. Yeah. Hopefully he's back in the second half of the year. I was out at that North Melbourne-Melbourne game. North Melbourne really got wiped off the park by Melbourne, a team that I think a lot of people would tip to finish below them on the ladder this year. They lost by 80 points. We had two match scenarios. They couldn't overtake Melbourne in the first one, so they lost that one. And then after losing by 80 points, they lost the lead in the second match scenario as well and lost that too. Things couldn't have gone that much worse. Charlie Compton avoided suspension for a dangerous tackle, but otherwise it was a bit of a disastrous day. Do we care? Does it matter? What do you think about North after that?
I think if I was a North Melbourne supporter, I'd be very upset by how that went. It was just messy, so unstructured. I think if you, even though the mix of personnel can be a little unconventional going into one of those practice matches, you expect there to be some kind of visible system to stop ball movement. And Melbourne were very, very fun to watch, exciting. They were able to put speed on the ball, but I don't think they're necessarily going to be one of the stronger teams this season, and probably under a first-year coach in Stephen King wouldn't be one of the more organised teams at this stage of the season either.
And as if you're not feeling sad enough at North Melbourne about what played out there, then you've got the George Wardlaw factor to deal with as well. And I think natural questions being asked as to why and how that even occurred, that hamstring issue, I think. And naturally, so I think they're rightful questions to be asked.
That was one of those classic ones where me and a couple of the other journalists at the game went down for some presses after the game, came back up, VFL was on, and we're like, oh, where's Wardlaw? We'll keep an eye on him. Where is Wardlaw? Suddenly he walks out of the change rooms in casual clothes, and they say that he's pulled his hammy again, so he's out for 3 to 4 weeks.
Why was he even playing in that game? I just don't understand it, especially to say this time of year you've got another practice match this week, and then head into the season proper. I would have thought that was an easy one to miss.
Yeah, the plan was to do managed minutes for the first half, and he barely made it past quarter time. So it's looking like a mistake now. And those soft tissue injuries, they can haunt you for a long time. He's losing a lot of his career already. The main concern I have for North is that they actually cared, I think. Michael Barlow came in for that presser while we were looking out the window for George Wardlaw and said that they really got a dressing down the players after the game. So they didn't shrug it off as a nothing. He said they were disappointed and it wasn't the effort that we need, which is for a club that hasn't delivered anything for seven years now, I think it is a concern. The good side of that game was the pickets. Cozzy and Latrell dominated. I went with easy pickings in my match report. I think we need a better name. Have we got anything that's coming to mind, any good ones?
Well, I mean, there's the obvious pickets, pickies. I don't know if Anthony Hudson and Matt Hill from Fox Footy are watching, but I'm going with the picket line.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
So I think there's at least good options to go with there, because they're going to be providing plenty of excitement, Ed.
I like the Dangerous Cousins. Right. Little Arrested Development joke.
Yes, I like it. Very niche.
Good. I think we're going to see another at least 10 years of those two together, as long as Cozzy's long contract lasts, maybe. Latrell will be playing, I think, round one, and Cozzy was just unbelievable in that game for Melbourne. So hopefully those two pairing well. Anything else, Ed? You're at the most games of anybody in this office.
I was asked to watch one off the TV to cover St Kilda. I was very impressed with the Saints. I will say, though, that I think Damien Hardwick would have been incensed at the end of that game, because Gold Coast defended like absolute knuckleheads when the Saints were on a roll in the second and third quarters. Just the amount, it was very greasy conditions. I think it was close to 100% humidity. I was just checking on the weather app on my phone. I was writing as if I was there. The ball was tumbling out the back. There were three Gold Coast defenders going up to spoil. It was going over. Like, they'll get that sorted out before the season. I think they can be the real deal as well. But I really liked what I saw from the Saints. It was close to a full-strength lineup, running with the four talls down back, which was very interesting. So even when Jack Silvani went off with the concussion, they replaced him with Isaac Keeler, who's been training in defence this summer. So they stuck to that structure, and they didn't look too slow behind the ball. And you'd think with how slippery the conditions were and the speed that Gold Coast has in their forward half, that if they're ever going to be exposed in a game, it would be in those kind of conditions. But the system held up well, so I think very promising signs there for the Saints.
Gotta love that for the Saints.
Still nervous though, Saints fans. It's interesting though. I mean, Naz, he's just added more and more to his bow, training a lot in the midfield over summer. So it'd be interesting to see what they do with him. It's a nice little, I'm not saying he's Dusty-like, but when Dusty was at his best, Damien Hardwick always had the option to throw him forward and he could have an impact there. So I would think with Nzaia they could probably do that too.
Yep.
I'll just add, I thought Filippo, the midfielder, was really natural, looked really good. He was able to pick up the ball in transition as well as in the stoppages. And for someone who struggled to get his hands on it when he was in the senior team last year, sort of playing in a forward role, I thought very impressive. Like, he looked really, really comfortable as a full-time mid.
Yeah, he has had some extremely low possession games, so that's obviously a good sign. Good, nothing is ever going to go wrong at St Kilda, so I'm sure that's all good vibes for the Saints fans going into the year. Now, time for quick hands to finish off. You were both sent out to Captain's Day earlier in this week. What did you notice? Who was sort of shuffling around? What did we all see?
Well, it was a heavy content creator field, wasn't it, at Captain's Day? And we've done a few over the years, Ed. It was pretty well run. A few different sort of faces as well. Neither of the West Coast co-captains were present. Ruben Jinby made the trip over and sort of sat awkwardly on the end of the team photo, didn't he? But I thought it went pretty well.
Yeah, he was having a bit of fun, Reuben Jinvi. He was telling people that he was sixth in line to come to the function. So clearly there wasn't much appetite at West Coast this week for a trip to the Eastern Seaboard.
And have to talk about how you're going to go this year.
No, but he enjoyed himself.
A lot of
talk
about line of succession this week. Reuben Jinvi's going a lot better than the former prince.
Very true. But no, it was a good day. It sounds like there was a lot of good discussion too at the commission. They've shifted things a little bit. They used to do a bit of a brunch. Before the captain's day, before they came out and faced the media, where they'd meet with the head honchos of the AFL. They've shifted that to a dinner the night before, so nice casual opportunity, maybe have a beer or two responsibly with the hierarchy of the AFL, talk about the rule changes and stuff like that. So it sounds like that went a lot better than the old ham and cheese croissant.
I'm sure one player who wasn't expecting a lot of requests and then suddenly media was all over him that morning was Toby Nankervis after you were first on Code Sports Line with the news of McCulty Lefau's drink driving charge. He was handed a 2-game ban. One of them is a practice match, so it'll be round one will be the main match that Lefau misses. Do we think Richmond handled it okay, and was the penalty severe enough?
Well, it was a tough one for Toby Nankervis because the media day typically means that they're in full playing kit, so no pockets for a phone or anything similar, and they're basically accounted for the entire morning. They're booked up, so the club largely can't get to them. So I'm not too sure how much knowledge poor Nank actually had of the situation that had
sometimes
played out.
That's a good thing.
In the hours that preceded facing the media. But I personally thought it was pretty light. I mean, it's naturally compared to other suspensions from across the competition. I think one of them being a practice game, you know, he was very far over the limit. It was, you know, after we're in this heavy practice match phase as well, which I know doesn't go into it, but I know Richmond were disappointed about him not being all that forthcoming with the information as well. But I think the core of it is just how dangerous this act is. I thought it would be a stronger penalty, and I think it naturally turns the conversation that we've had over the last couple of years that I know the PA has been pushing the AFL for at different times to have a little bit more of a concrete-ish framework. You know, I think you still need to have flexibility in there, but a little bit of an MRO matrix style setup when it comes to these off-field suspensions.
Yeah, we're not going to hear the AFLPA weigh in on this one because he's escaped with only missing one proper match. But I think in reality it will be a longer absence for him from the senior team. He was odds on to play round one in a ruck forward role, and now he's thrown it away with a stupid act. I think it will take him a while to earn the trust back from the coaches and players, and he probably now sits behind someone in the pecking order and might take quite a while to work his way into the senior side.
Yeah, the only thing I would say about the penalty is that Richmond, they're hoping that they don't have to do this every year or ever again, but that's 2 years in a row now they've penalised a player, including the practice matches, as part of a suspension. So last year, Noah Bolte got a 6-game ban from the club, but two of those were practice matches, so realistically it was only 4. And then again, Lefau is sort of half the suspension really counts because it's the main season. So they will say we won't have to dish out any penalties of these again because none of our players will stuff up again. But it's a worrying trend that you seem to factor these games in as part of the penalty when they don't count as much as the others, no matter what you can say. As I said, I was at Casey yesterday, and at halftime we noticed Changuth GS was pulled out of the game and was told to do his running. He was charging up and down in 30-degree heat at Casey, and then he was running laps while the match was actually on, I noticed. And the boundary umpires had to dodge him around the boundary line, and he was out there for a good hour or so running. I thought it was one of the worst things you could possibly cop on a game day to actually have to be out there running the whole time. Anything you guys have noticed over the years that have been horrible? What's the worst thing you can be made to do on a match day?
Oh, that's pretty bad. I don't know if it gets worse than that, especially somewhere like Casey Fields where there's so much space out the back. Go and run out the back. Did he's walking up and down the Melbourne Fashion Festival runway not count towards his numbers?
He racked up the steps, didn't he?
For the week. But no, that's I can't recall one that I've seen that's tougher than that.
I think arguably worse would be, and I'm just speaking from personal experience as a VAFA Division 2 player last year. It was a practice match where I started the game with a tight hamstring. It only got tighter as the game wore on. I planned to take myself off at halftime, but we already had too many players that had pulled out of the game. So I was basically just playing as a goalkeeper, staying close to goal, hardly moving for the last quarter.
Try not to
injure my hamstring before round one. It's just staying out there. I think you'd much rather be pulled out of a game than left in one that you don't want to be playing in.
Yeah, fair enough. Lauren, we've all been watching your tour of Carlton's Icon Park on Code Sports. You can watch that video right now if you choose, going through the facilities. You've had a look at Hawthorn as well. You're building quick rankings, I suppose, of the clubs. What do you think of those two first? And then Any others that have sort of crossed your radar as good facilities or bad facilities?
Yeah, it's been nice to go sort of behind the curtain a little bit, because a lot of clubs you go to these days, you get to the foyer or the cafe and then the doors are locked. And yep. What do the players actually get up to? So it's been nice to give people a little bit of a look at. And two, probably at either end of the spectrum. Hawthorns has just opened, so this is fit for purpose, you know, built for purpose, I should say, for the two teams. Whereas Carlton, this is an historic building that they've essentially redeveloped over and over again to its latest phase. So a lot of state-of-the-art stuff at Carlton, which I was really not surprised by, but it did shock me given the age of their building on Royal Parade there. They've got the on-site imaging facility, which they're the only AFL club to have access to that. A very heavy green focus going forward with their environmental action plan. Whereas Hawthorns, as I say, is built, you know, basically to code on all fronts. So they've been really impressive. Had a look at Brisbane's a couple of years ago too at Springfield, again is a new build where men's and women's facilities effectively mirror each other, which I think is going to become the gold standard. So it's been nice to get out and about and have a look, whereas others who don't have such a home, like your friends out at Casey, Melbourne, I think are looking on enviously at the moment.
Yeah, I could imagine the Casey facilities are run down and a little bit old, I would say. Ed, you've spent a lot of time in cafes over the years. Mm. What are your favourites? Where's your favourite place to go?
The redeveloped Witten Oval Cafe has shot into the lead. That's a fantastic facility Very in there. Cool. And you get to see Luke Beveridge when you go there as well. So I really enjoy my trips.
Hopefully he sings you a song.
Witten Oval at the moment. I quite like Moorabbin. It's a bit smaller. They've got a loyalty program going there in the Moorabbin Cafe. So you can get like a little card added into your digital wallet on your phone, and they give you Saint points.
Really? When
you
get
I don't know if they're called Saint points, but you get loyalty
they
points
are now.
If you order a coffee. And I think I'm on about 6 points at the moment. I don't know how close I am to a free
coffee. So he'll be putting his hand up for more Ross Lyon press conferences, it sounds like, for a couple of free lattes along the way.
Yeah.
If I could give a shout out to the club cafes, more PowerPoints, please. Because, I mean, we've all spent time at Edwin's on Olympic Boulevard, all of these iconic cafes when you go into all the different press conferences. But sometimes we're just hunting a PowerPoint for our computer. I've been known to stop at the odd McDonald's to get a quick charge on the side of the road. But if we're having a whole day on the road, you don't want to be searching for that specific table because that's where the one outlet
that's
is.
That's deliberate because they don't want you lurking in there. One of the only stories I've ever broken was I happened to be sitting next to Orazio Fantasia in the cafe at Carlton, and he was telling a couple of elderly ladies who there was like some kind of morning tea club at the Blues, and they asked him if he was playing, and he's like, nah, not this week. And that's how I found out he wasn't going to be selected later that night. So,
you know what?
They don't love
how
you
get
hanging around in the cafe.
As long as you get them.
One of the worst, I think, is Geelong has revamped their playing section, and it's all quite good in there at GMHBA Stadium now, and that all works well. But the worst is for the media there. It's always been an issue. You used to have to run across the ground to the opposing rooms on the opposite side to the media box. Now you have to internally go through a tunnel that goes past the new opposition rooms to a main press conference, and that means the Geelong coach has to go past the opposition rooms very intimately to the press conference, which can cause sort of awkward situations. It's a dead spot for coverage as well. You can't get any reception down there. So that move to move into the middle there hasn't worked. They need to rethink that one.
We need some federal or state government funding to resolve that issue.
Yeah,
they've been a bit short for a few years. But you're never short on the Code AFL show, where we'll be back next week and the week after and the week after that as the lead into the season continues. Lauren, thank you for coming on again. Thanks to Al Patton as well. Ed, thanks as always. Make sure you go to codesports.com.au to check out everything we're up to. Go footy.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.